Chapter 5 Where do I meet them and what do I say? I was in the supermarket 3 blocks from my house. Every Thursday night I was there getting the groceries I need. I came to the end of an aisle and looked right but turned left. And I saw her. She was sharp, not stunning, but sharp. As I cruised by I glanced at her left hand and, hallelujah, no wedding ring. She was someone I wanted to meet. She didn't have any kids with her, so that was another plus for me. I kept about 20 yards behind her, and even though I'd selected everything on my list, I kept looking as though I was looking for more items. I was planning my time so I could get in the checkout line right behind her and strike up a conversation. She headed for the checkout line and so did I. A family with 5 noisy kids was headed the same direction and I could see that they might cut me off and beat me there. I gunned the shopping cart and cut a corner real close. Too close, in fact. My foot hit the display of 200 tightly stacked cans of beans. They began to tumble slowly at first and then an avalanche. As they did their thing, I did mine. I fell. Flat on my face. And as I did, I involuntarily shoved the shopping cart and it took off. You guessed it. It shot across the floor on a straight line towards that attractive woman. It was a perfect shot. Right in her behind. I wanted to meet her, but not that way. By this time the laughter from all the people shut out the sounds of the bean cans. As she turned and looked at the cart with no one there, her eyes scanned the chaos to see who the perpetrator was and found me spread face down on the floor against the bean cans. I smiled. She laughed. We met. The rest is history. I wouldn't recommend that method, but it worked for me. Where to meet eligible people? Where do you go to meet eligible people? Does it just happen as in this case, or do you work at making it happen? Some feel you will meet the right person by happenstance. Others contend you need to be aggressive in looking for a potential partner. Keep in mind that the greater the number of people of the kind you would be interested in, the greater the possibilities. It's best to look for abundance. I heard the story of a high school teacher who had turned 40. She suddenly realized she really wanted to be married. But being a teacher, she had neither time nor energy during the school year to look around, so during the summer this became her project. She used personal ads in singles magazines and went to numerous events and activities that she enjoyed. For 2 summers she did this, and during that time she actually interviewed 68 men. She married the 68th. Working at this project is a much better possibility than waiting for that predestined individual who's just going to one day out of the blue fall into your lap. And for many of these examples that do just happen, when you look back you find that there usually was some orchestration of time, place, and events that occurred. It is true that you need to pray. Seek God's will for your life whether being married or remaining single and then ask for His leading. But you just don't sit at home waiting for a knock on the door. It's a combination of praying, waiting, and looking. I've talked to several people who grew up in small towns. They said they didn't want to move from their town, but since they didn't find someone in college, they figured it would be better to live in a large city for a while so they could spouse hunt. There just weren't that many available attractive prospects for them in a town of 4,000. This may sound simplistic to say, but it needs to be said, and you'll see why later. If you're interested in marriage and interested in a certain person, is that candidate available? You may be interested, attracted, head over heels in love, but if they're not available, your efforts will be unrewarded. There are some people who are available and others who aren't. Availability, psychological and situational. There are 2 kinds of availability, psychological and situational. Psychological availability includes having recovered and grown from previous relationships, having separated emotionally from parents in a healthy way, having the ability to commit to another person, and not being afraid of marriage. Situational availability includes several factors. If the person you are interested in is living with a lover, not only are they not a good choice for you emotionally and spiritually, the fact that they haven't chosen marriage is another warning sign. Why didn't they marry? What about their relationship with the Lord? If they have just come out of a living together arrangement, the same concerns on your part need to be there. This person is not a good candidate now. Give them a couple of years to grow spiritually and emotionally. If you're interested in someone who is separated, they aren't available. They're still married in the eyes of the state and God, whether the separation has been 5 weeks or 5 years. Aside from that, what a person goes through emotionally during the breakup of a marriage means they are not at all ready for a new relationship, even though they may be desperate for one. A divorced person is a possibility depending upon how long it's been, financial status, bitterness, emotional readiness, etc. There is one other category to consider, those who are married to their work or to their family of origin. There are many others who are available. You can find them, but just keep these considerations in mind. Where to begin looking? Where does a person begin? Look around you. Where do you live? In an apartment complex? If so, what kind of get-togethers do they have? If they have some, are they the kind you're comfortable with or are they too wild? Why not create your own? I've seen groups started in companies and apartments for Christian singles, Bible studies, as well as social events. If you can find two or three others, all of you could work toward this goal by sending out information. In a 1 mile radius around your home, what are the stores, the shops, the entertainment possibilities? Do you ever walk or jog in your neighborhood, either on the sidewalks or at a school facility? Remember's key factor: put yourself in a place where you're most likely to find the person that fits your most wanted list. We'll come back to this point again and again. Will the places suggested here meet this factor? That's for you to decide. Sometimes having some assistance helps you meet others, whether walking in a residential area, at an outdoor mall, on the beach, or any place near you where there are people. What am I talking about? Several years ago, we got a golden retriever. I have walked him all over the place, including every local spot mentioned above. Because of the striking appearance and outgoing personality of Sheffield, my wife and I have met dozens of people we probably never would have otherwise. Our dog acts as a magnet and draws people of all ages. Then he becomes the point of contact and friendships even on the block where we've lived for almost a quarter of a century. Speaking of dogs, a friend of mine used to take his Labrador puppy to the beach with him. One day he noticed a very attractive woman standing by the water in a two-piece bathing suit. As he sat there watching her, he began to mull over how he could meet her. But while he was thinking, his dog took matters into his own hands. The dog headed toward the water, angled toward the woman, and when he arrived proceeded to hike his hind leg and relieve himself on her leg. She was not too happy about this turn of events. There are better and safer ways for an introduction. Another place to meet possible partners is at work or work-related activities. This occurs through the process of networking. Some people don't like to have friends or relatives either suggest a possible partner or introduce them to someone. Sometimes other people can be very intrusive into our lives, especially when they are pushy and incessant. They make statements like, "I just know that the two of you will hit it off," or "This is the perfect one for you," or "I've told him all about you and he can't wait to meet you." As if they're experts on you. When you hear comments like the first two statements, you might shift the responsibility back to them and respond with, "Tell me why you think we'll hit it off." You could also say, "I appreciate your thinking about me in this way and I'll consider this possibility." You realize, though, it may not work out for some reason. And if so, you probably won't know why. Is that all right with you? Some of you may want this assistance from other people. If you do, don't leave it up to random selection on the part of those on your search committee. Why not create a wanted poster giving a description of the type of person you're seeking? Give your friend some guidance to go by, and it will save you some time. My wife and I have a friend who is in her 30s. We have introduced her to several Christian men, one of whom she dated for a while. She was appreciative of the help, even though at the time of this writing we're still looking. My daughter married at the age of 27 after two previous engagements. She was a manicurist at a hair and nail salon. One day when she went to work, they laughed and chatted a bit more. After he left, Cheryl took Jan in the back room and asked who he was. Jan told her that she'd been cutting his hair for the past 4 years, he was a Christian, and needed to have a date with her. Cheryl told her to give him her phone number, and the rest is history. They were married in 1988. Something like this could work for you. There are times in the counseling office when a person will say, "Where do I go to meet people?" If Avenue 2 stock questions to ask in reply, "What do you enjoy doing?" and "What would you enjoy doing with a marriage partner?" Go to those places that would give you things in common with the person you marry. If you're into art, visit galleries and exhibits. Consider bookstores, libraries, swap meets, video stores, or even the laundromat. One writer suggested that women go to supermarkets early in the evening, since men tend to shop earlier. And when you go to the laundromat, take extra bleach and fabric softener, since men tend to forget these items. If you're a real time saver or time-oriented person, what I'm going to suggest may stress you somewhat. I know that many busy people try to hit stores or even sports clubs when they are least crowded. But that won't work when you're trying to meet others. Go at the busiest time, since there are more people there, especially in the laundromat. And above all, talk to people. Take a book with you, but not to read. If you're hoping to meet a Christian, take a Christian-oriented book with you or wear something with a distinctively Christian message on it. Both of these attract attention and are discussion starters. A Christian man or woman has a much smaller pool of possibilities to choose from, so it's important to find places or events where other Christians gather. You may either live in an area which is limited in population or attend a church that is quite small. It could be there are no singles groups in your own church or even in your area. You may out of necessity be the person who could assist in developing such a group. Singles conferences, both regional and local, can be a source of contact. If your church doesn't have a ministry to singles, begin calling other churches. In larger metropolitan areas, there are numerous churches which have well-developed programs for singles, and those who attend are not just from that local church. They come from dozens of other churches just for the opportunity to be ministered to and to meet people. There is nothing wrong in looking to church singles groups to meet a prospective partner. That's part of the purpose of these groups. One husband who had been married for 33 years shared with me how he met his wife at a church. Through college he had dated, but hadn't found anyone. Now that he was out of the college department at his church and moving into business, he decided he wanted to get married. He said, "I was spiritually immature at that time, so I put out a 10-minute fleece to the Lord about finding a wife. I was sitting in church when I said, 'Lord, after this service, I'm going to go down to the college department, and if there is a woman there to be my wife, have her walk toward me.' I went down to the college department and started looking over the women there row by row. It was a cross between Death Valley and the Dead Sea. I was getting discouraged when I saw this woman walking away from me. All I could see was her back, but I knew she was a real possibility. I met her, and 6 weeks later we were engaged. Dating and dating services. I've heard a number of people in their 30s and 40s comment on the negative experiences they've had dating. It's expensive and a waste of time investing in someone and then not having it work out, and it's difficult to juggle dating when you're working and have kids. Dating is a problem. But in spite of the negatives, consider what happens in dating. In dating, you will discover what either attracts you to a person or repulses. Or a combination of both. In dating, if you are seeing someone who is not bringing out the best in you, there's a message there for you to hear: stop dating them. In dating, you're taking a big risk. It's called the possibility of rejection. But it's worth it. If it happens, it's not, I repeat, not because you're defective. In dating, you could become so enamored and infatuated that you think your partner can do little that is wrong. But eventually the bubble will burst, and the sooner the better, so you can now build a real relationship. Without dating, this may not have happened. In dating, the purpose is to discover if you and this other person can build a relationship, perhaps permanent. And if not, it still hasn't been time wasted. Christian dating services have become more and more popular over the years. I know that there are many jokes about using such a service, and you don't always know about some of the people who join, but it appears there are more benefits than negatives. I've interviewed numerous singles who have been involved with these services, and they felt that overall they were beneficial. Before using any such service, though, investigate it thoroughly. Find out about the history of the service, the population sample it has, or number of participants. Basically, this program is a networking service allowing singles to contact people who may have similar interests. Perhaps Southern California is unusual in the variety of dating services available. One such program is called Equally Yoked. This is what their brochure states: choosing a lifetime mate to share a Christ-centered marriage is the most important decision Christians will make. Equally Yoked Christian Introductions has served thousands of Christian singles since 1986, and the Lord has blessed over 250 members with husbands and wives. We offer this service because, other than church, there aren't many opportunities for single Christians to meet. Even pastors have met their wives through our service. Personal screening. Equally Yoked meets each of our new members face-to-face and discusses their Christian testimony. Prospective members provide spiritual and personal references upon request. How does it work? Each member completes a profile sheet, submits pictures, and answers 5 interview-style questions, including their Christian testimony on a brief video. Our mutual consent selection process ensures both members would like to meet each other. Equally Yoked is simply a means of providing Christian singles exposure. Equally Yoked today now has 6 offices serving Southern California and is expanding nationally. 11 Equally Yoked staff are committed Christians and dedicated to provide excellent service to our membership. Please call your nearest office for your free orientation, or check out their website at one of the newest services has been developed by clinical psychologist and author Neil Clark Warren, Ph.D., and a team of experts in psychology and the behavioral sciences. They created the matching engine or software behind the website. Dr. Warren has more than 30 years of experience in counseling and research in the field of relationships. Their fact sheet states the following: how many registered users does Harmony have? eHarmony.com was launched on August 22, 2000. On July 10, 2001, their website reached a milestone with 75,000 users. In August 2002, eHarmony had nearly 475,000 registered members. Where do users live? The states with the largest number of eHarmony users are California, Texas, Florida, New York, and Illinois. eHarmony.com has users in every state of the nation and in all the Canadian provinces. In the near future, eHarmony plans to have an international presence. How is different from other online matching services? eHarmony.com is completely different from online and offline dating services. With its standards for accepting only emotionally healthy singles into the community, it is designed to help singles who are looking to find someone for a lifelong relationship. How does match people? Utilizing a highly advanced matching engine, creates compatible pools of candidates for each person. Participants begin the process by taking a test that gives them a free personality profile that may well tell them more about their personal values and biases than they have shown before. More than 1,500,000 matches have been made in 2 years, at least 20,000 people have been kept from the matching pool because they do not match eHarmony's criteria for psychological and character health. -250 couples confirm to eHarmony they have married after being successfully matched on eHarmony. eHarmony.com members are notified by email when a suitable and appropriate match becomes available. The matching and meeting process take place initially through the anonymity of email, with guiding members through 6 stages of communication, assisting them to ask the tough questions early and get to know each other from the inside out. A third program has the following as its statement of purpose and philosophy: Christian Singles Confidential Introduction. Southern California's exclusively Christian single only on one personal introduction service since 1987. Christian love is not lacking in the world, only finding it. The world is filled with God's believers wanting to give and receive love. Where do I meet them? 115 Christian Singles Confidential Introductions was formed as a non-denominational ministry that God can use as a means to help provide a way for Christians, who love the Lord, to end each other. Finding a Christian mate in this complex society can sometimes be difficult. Studies indicate chance encounters are limited and a lot of years wasted. Christian Singles Confidential Introductions was created for those who would like to use a Christian introduction service, but are concerned about privacy and confidentiality, not being comfortable using a 900 number, the personals, or recording a video for others to view. If you are seriously seeking a Christian lifetime mate and would prefer a more confidential way of finding a compatible Christian mate, Christian Singles Confidential Introductions is a caring, very confidential, one-on-one personalized service of exclusive Christian singles. CSCI is not a video dating service, you are introduced to each person individually. A recent Los Angeles Times poll sampled opinions of over 2,000 single adults. The most popular answer to their main goal was to be happily married. This is because God created you with a need for another person. God's word very clearly states in 2 Corinthians 6 verses 14 to 18, Christians should marry only other Christians. If you cannot find a compatible Christian to date, you will eventually out of loneliness date non-Christians. If you continue to date non-Christians, you will eventually marry a non-Christian. My heart's desire is to help ensure you a more successful marriage by finding you. 116, where do I meet them? 1. Someone who loves the Lord as you do. According to God's word, this is number 1. 2. Someone you can like and become your best friend, then love. 3. Someone who is a lot like you with similar interests. Every common interest you have is a blessing. Some minor incompatibilities can be overcome, however, some are absolutely essential, like spirituality, energy level, money use, personal habits. 4. Someone who has the magic ingredient you need to begin a relationship. Chemistry. Physical attraction is critical, however, should not be the sole criteria. 5. Someone who is emotionally healthy before marriage, as stated in Philippians chapter 3 verse 13, bringing all your energies to bear on one thing. Forgetting the past and looking forward to the future. 6. Someone having the same goals, not letting weeds grow around your dreams. People who are truly in love and are compatible will have the same shared dreams and goals to reach them. 7. Someone with whom you can communicate emotionally, who has a desire to share intimacy, but the sharing of emotions, thoughts, feelings, fears, and joys. 8. Someone you can be comfortable with, so you can be yourself. Someone genuine who does not play games by having a facade during the courtship and does not portray who they really are. This ministry is highly confidential, is not designed to be a dating service, but wants to match compatible Christian couples for lifetime commitment. The personal application to be filled out is very detailed, and a 3-hour personal interview by the founder of this ministry is involved. If you use a service such as these and are interested in meeting someone, be sure to use the GASP approach. Translated, it means the first and perhaps several initial contacts are get acquainted sessions and not to be considered as dates. Use the time for investigation randier than selection. That can come later. You need to discover as much as you can about this individual and develop just a friendship first. Let the romantic side develop from being friends. As with any program or ministry, screening is very important. People do misrepresent themselves, and the ads placed are for the purpose of making contact. Make your first contacts over the phone initially, and the hours spent may help you determine if you want to get together or not. You don't want to end up feeling stuck and obligated with a person for several hours. A male friend shared his reflections on several years of dating and using such services. I believe his experience can be helpful to anyone dating. In searching for the perfect mate, it has taken a long time for me to discover that there really is no such creature out there. Everything is found in degrees of compromise. Can I live with this or can I accept that, etc. Then when I have found one that fits most all of my criteria and parameters, then the question is, will I fit hers? It's extremely difficult trying to find someone where the gears all seem to mesh into place without a lot of grinding. I think one of the more important things that I find invaluable in dating now is all the experience that I have compiled over the years. Having years of different situations, I have reached the point now in my 40s where I feel that I finally know some of the answers to the questions that I didn't even know to ask in my 20s or 30s. But even now I am still adding and updating my list of questions. If there are any bits of advice that I could give anyone that is looking for the ideal mate for themselves, it is this: ask questions of anyone you date and store their answers in your memory bank to see if the answers continue to be consistent with their actions. If something appears to be a red flag, confront it and don't let it slide, as it's not that big of a deal. Interact with the other person's friends, such as on camping trips or skiing trips, or play interaction group type games. If possible, spend time with the other person's parents. If there are ways of seeing how the other person will handle pressure situations, put them in it. This way you are able to see how flexible they are or can be and how they will hold up under pressure, build a real friendship but stay out of bed, pray together, have similar values and interests in things, come to know the other person's faults and know that you can accept them, watch to see how they treat their pets, and continue to interview right up to the last moments before marriage. And as hard as it may seem, if that inner voice from within tells you that you are making a mistake, at least stop and listen to it and be willing to pull the plug or at least put it on hold until things can be clarified in the relationship right up to the day of the wedding. It is my feeling that I would much rather be very embarrassed and cause hurt to both of us by putting things on hold or having to walk away from the relationship right up to the final days before the wedding, than suck it up, be a man and live in misery for the rest of my life. Why marry when maybe in reality you knew deep down inside of you that things were not right or small things were adding up to be big things, but you didn't know how to confront them or you were afraid that you might hurt the other person by confronting her? A lot of this stuff will come to the surface through premarital counseling. Know ahead of time that some people act able to mask or hide things, or if you don't ask specific questions may feel that, if you didn't ask, they didn't lie. As I look back in my dating over the years, I have come to realize how really naive I was in even trying to find out what questions I should ask or thinking that I really didn't have the right to be asking certain questions until I was further into the relationship. There were some questions of which it didn't even occur to me that I would have to ask a Christian. I assumed that she would have never have been into something that would be blatantly wrong that you would have to ask. Never assume anything. I now have a list of about 12 questions that I ask right from the beginning, and if they have problems with it, I would rather know now and save myself from becoming involved and the additional hurt from having to break up later. These are questions that I would feel comfortable answering for someone who was interested in dating me. Even though in the past I have asked questions, I found that my list of questions was not complete. A good example of this was recently, I met a woman that enjoyed a number of activities that I did and she claimed to be a Christian. After a number of dates we found that we were enjoying each other, and she invited me to go along with her and a group of her Christian friends to the mountains for a fishing trip. I found this setting absolutely invaluable for insights that I didn't see while we were dating one-on-one. First, I saw that her language changed when she was with her friends. Plus, she became more worldly in this atmosphere. She then went into depression and wouldn't open up to what the problem was. Then when everybody was ready to go out for afternoon fishing, she decided that she wanted to go shopping instead of fishing. She talked one of her girlfriends into going along with her, which was fine. However, she and her girlfriend didn't get back for dinner until 9 p.m. drunk. Instead of going shopping, they went to the local mountain cowboy bar to go dancing and drinking. All that I could think of was, "Thank you, Lord, for opening my eyes now." A week later, she dropped by and proudly showed me an engagement ring. She let me know that the reason she acted the way she did on the trip was because she found that she was missing this great, Christian, guy that she had been living with for the past year and a half. She had forgotten to mention it when we had started dating. The fact diet she had just broken up with him a few weeks earlier had slipped her mind. As I looked over my list of questions, I really thought that as long a Christian, if they had been living with someone since they had become a Christian, really wasn't necessary, but rather an oxymoron. Like I said before, never assume. A friend of mine spends hours talking about everything including family background, vocation, interests, sports, friendship, their Christian faith, desire for children, sexual standards, and boundaries. After several conversations, then the decision to get together is made. Friends have given me the list of questions they use for their phone interview. Sometimes the contacts are just by mail. Here is an example of a letter written by a man to a response inquiry to his ad. The woman writing had given a general description and background of herself as well as a picture. Dear Jean, thank you for your recent letter and for answering my ad in CSC. You probably, like myself, have found it difficult meeting quality Christians that have some of the same values and interests as yourself, so thank you for taking a chance. Please let me introduce myself to you. My name is John Smith. I am the one that loves the outdoors. I'm 48 years old, young at heart, and try to keep myself physically fit through playing racquetball twice a week and working out on other days. Play tennis whenever I can find a partner, and I enjoy hiking, mountain bike riding, and jogging through the hills behind my house when they don't have it dosed down from being a fire hazard. But what I really enjoy is being out in the outdoors, loving to fish, camp, travel, horseback ride, boat and water ski, and snow skiing. I equally enjoy both mountains and beach. When I have a chance, I love to fish Baja, Mexico in the winters and then stay in a friend's cottage, on a small island in BC, Canada in the summers. When time allows, I like to travel and camp through Utah, Wyoming and Montana, sometimes wondering which of these beautiful places that I would like to live if I had a chance. It's land of HM to daydream. Professionally, I'm in the travel marketing business, where I represent lodges, resorts, hotels, airlines, B&Bs, and guest ranches to travel trade shows for travel agents, distributing their literature and brochures to the agents. I have also been involved with putting on a sports, vacation and RV show at convention centers for the past 14 years. I've been attending the First Evangelical Free Church of Fullerton for the past 20 years and feel that I have really learned and benefited from Chuck Swindoll's teachings and insights. I'm going to really miss him, now that he has gone to Dallas Theological Seminary to be the school's president. Jean, you asked if I have had any luck with the ad so far? Well, yes and no. If Avenue met some very Wonderhill ladies through this, and I have had some horrible experiences, where the dates had totally misrepresented themselves. So, as a result, I have found that I now not only ask for a picture, as yes, I am a normal, visual male and would like to see if I am going to be attracted towards the other person, and no, I am not looking for perfection, as it does not exist, male or female. But also have a list of questions that I have found necessary to ask, not only just to see if there is enough substance in addition to having like interests and being attracted by a picture, but having similar values and beliefs are also very important to me. I am not dating just to be dating, and with some of the experiences that I have had, I didn't think that you would have to ask a Christian some of these questions, but I was wrong. I have found that I should not take anything for granted. So, if you wouldn't mind along with sending a photo of yourself, please answer the following questions. 1. Have you ever been married? If so, for how long? 2. Is your divorce final and when was it final? 3. How many times have you been married? 4. Do you have any children and do they live with you? 5. Have you ever been involved in a relationship with a woman? 6. Have you, since being a Christian, lived with a guy? 7. Are you charismatic? 8. Are you Democrat, Republican, or Independent? 9. Are you pre-tribulation, post-tribulation, or neither? 10. To you, what are the 5 most important qualities that you want and look for in a mate? 11. Do you smoke or use drugs? 12. And finally, who is Jesus to you and what does he mean to you in your life? It might not sound like it here, but I really am a fun guy and enjoy having a good time, but have had to become more cautious in my dating through the mail. I hope that I haven't offended or blown you away in any way, but since you are new at this type of dating, you might think of asking some of these questions or some of your own, as it could sure save you a lot of time and heartbreaks. And feel free to ask any questions of me if you like, as I am a pretty open person. Look forward to hearing from you. God bless, John Smith. Once you've met and seem to hit it off, then you may want to expand your time. And doing it this way can help to avoid expensive get-togethers. For the initial contact, meet one another at a neutral site. By doing this, you are making it safer. There are both men and women who would prefer not having the new person low where they live initially until they are better acquainted. Meet at a coffee shop or someplace where you can talk and interact. Going to a play, movie, or even a church service is not going to help you get acquainted. Several times I've heard singles say, "I messed up bad the first time I talked with him or her. I guess I was so anxious to make a good impression, I became tongue-tied. I'm sure they thought something was wrong with me." Perhaps the problem that creates stress is looking at this individual as a possible spouse. Don't. You don't know them yet. You're just getting acquainted with another stranger. You don't know if you're going to like the person or not. Trying to impress them won't work. Just be yourself and carry on a conversation just like you would with anyone else. And in time you 11 never know where you will meet someone or how it will come out. We've all heard the horror stories of how relationships didn't work out. Consider this one that did succeed from the initial date through the first 11 years of marriage, the meeting and dating. I was 18 and in my first year of college. In January, at the beginning of the new semester, we had a new student, a male. I am, by nature, somewhat friendly and outgoing, so most of the girls in this very small class began to ask me who the new guy was. No one knew and no one was finding out, so I boldly walked over to the guy and said, "Hi, who are you?" He told me his name and I shared mine. I then proceeded to introduce him to the other students in the class. The attraction at the time I met Mark, I was headed for trouble. Mark is old-fashioned and immediately began treating me like a lady, opening and closing my car door, making sure my coat was all the way in the car. He treated me with such respect. Plus, he was attractive and had a little money to go out. All very attractive qualities to me. He also seemed to have a strong relationship with the Lord. Mark came from a very quiet, traditional, reserved family that showed little emotion. I came from a very noisy, boisterous family, one who had a lot of love and affection, and showed it. The kind that had mom and dad kissing in the kitchen when we kids came home from wherever. I suppose that this freedom of speech and freedom of hugs and losses was attractive to Mark, as well as the support of his person. I guess I could also say I have some looks, which would be attractive to him, but that would be putting words into his mouth. Point one way to describe the differences in our families would be the story of when we went to visit our sisters. Mark and I decided to take a trip to visit his sister for a day and then mine. They lived 45 minutes apart. We had Sunday dinner at his sister's house, complete with linen napkins and tablecloth, roast, potatoes, quiet table talk. Everyone passed all the food before the first bite was taken, and a lovely blessing of the food was said. Then we had Sunday supper at my sister's house, complete with paper plates and napkins, lots of noise, forgetting to pass the food, fried chicken to eat with your fingers, and a simple, "Thanks God for the food," prayer. I thought it was quite funny to have the differences so contrasted. We have since discovered that is a very accurate picture of each of us. Mark is quiet and reserved, and I am noisy and outgoing. We are very opposite. The proposal. About 6 months before Mark proposed, we began talking about which direction our relationship was headed. At that point we had been dating 2 years. Our question was whether we felt God wanted us to be together. So, we decided that we would begin earnestly seeking what God wanted and we would either break up or get engaged. We had been having a long-distance relationship for approximately 1 year. He was away at school. We decided the decision would be made before he went back to school in September. I had felt as if God told me early in the relationship that he was the one I was supposed to marry. I think I needed to know that, otherwise I probably would have broken up with him soon after we began dating. Since I didn't know what God was saying to him, I didn't want to push. September came and went, no decision. Then we were to decide by Thanksgiving, then Christmas, and then before he went back to school in January began to be concerned that Mark was leaning toward breaking up, and if he did then I figured God had another plan for me. Finally the last day came before he was to leave for school. We decided to go out for dinner. Dinner ended, the restaurant was closed, the workers were mopping the floor when Mark decided we should discuss the pros and cons of whether or not to get married. For every pro I brought up, he brought up a con. I began to get frustrated when he finally listed some more pros. He then said, "I feel confident by looking at this, that you can fill the job." My reply was, "What are you asking?" "I'm asking you to be my wife, will you marry me?" I told him that with my father's permission, I would. We went home about 10:30 p.m. and began the process of calling our parents. Mine lived in Arkansas. So, when we called them, it was close to 1 a.m. Mom had always said that if I got engaged, I was to call Collect, so I was sure that she would know why I was calling Collect at 1 o'clock a.m. Needless to say, our parents were thrilled. Our wedding was the day I had always planned for. My goal for the day was that the focus would be on God. We had a lovely ceremony with lots of music as my family loves music. My sibling participated in singing most of the songs. Our ceremony was planned around the fact that God is the center of our lives and the center of our marriage. There are many stories like this. Take the time to search for a person, screen them carefully, and then select.